So hi, welcome to Noise Podcast. I'm Shane.
I'm Glory.
And we're here with...
Hey, I'm Michael from the band Being as an Ocean.
And we have some questions to say about their upcoming album, Death Can Wait. So congrats on that. By the way, how do you feel about the response to the announcement so far?
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been great. It's been really, really cool. It's like, it has been quite the breath of fresh air because, yeah, it's been nice to hear people's opinions on what it reminds them of, which is the most important thing for us. It reminds them of the old Being as an Ocean, which I think if that's what they initially fell in love with, then great. I feel like that's the right path for sure.
Hell yeah. The album's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the lyrics on this fucking record, there were a couple moments where you gotta, because I was working out while listening to it, so I kind of stopped and went, damn. And then I just had to keep going, but it's just like, shit's good. Shit's good.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I like. Joel, he's a poet, you know, it's beautiful the way he can make words really cut deep. So that's so awesome to know, though. He'll be stoked to hear that.
Hell yeah.
Yay. So is there any meaning behind the album title or cover art?
So I think initially Death Can Wait, it actually started with the single Death Can Wait. And I think as we were piecing the whole album together musically and lyrically, we started to realize that the bigger meaning of Being as an Ocean is that we're not done yet. We've still got a lot to prove. And by that, it's, you know, we've lost members, we've had tours cancel, we've had so many, like almost so much bad luck happen over the last, since the pandemic, actually. And there were a lot of times where it was like, are we really sure about this, you know? And even, you know, you get the occasional message like, I didn't even know you guys were still a band. And it's just like, no, we're not done yet. We're not ready yet. We're not ready to pack it in yet. So I think it was kind of like that, the testament to ourselves is like, no, we're good. Death can wait. It's not time for us to go yet. It's not time for us to put this to bed just yet. We've still got a lot to prove on new music and what we want to achieve as people, not just as musicians, but as people with things to say. So yeah.
Gotcha.
I think that was the meaning behind the, you know, the title. Artwork wise, I think it's more of an aesthetic in terms of what we grew up with was like that kind of like punk DIY mindset. We, you know, before we became like a international touring band, we were playing shows in people's basements or in, you know, in their backyards or whatever, and we were just very into that whole like put it together and it, you know, if it sticks it sticks, it's gonna it so long as it's just to get something is together and it feels right, then let's roll with it. And I think the idea was to have it almost look like, you know, it's kind of fucked up. It's kind of, you know, like been ripped apart, put back together, and you know, made it look like it's been run through a scanner 1,000 times. And I think that kind of is, you know, where we wanted to express that, so to speak. So yeah, I think like visually it does have the meaning that, you know, it's we've put it together in whatever way we can, whether it's come from good things, bad things, it's still together, and this is the body of work that we are presenting. So,
oh yeah.
Fuck yeah.
What was kind of the factor that kept you guys going throughout the pandemic with all the lineup changes and whatnot? Was it the feeling of like, we still have something to prove, or was there something else that kept you guys going in that process? Maybe before you realized that there is still something to prove.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, I can tell you from a personal standpoint, it was like, I took to heart a lot of the comments and the feedback on the previous record, Proxy, that came out in 2019, if I remember rightly. I took a lot of the comments to heart on that one. Mm-hmm. And it did well. It was a great record. You know, look at the numbers on paper. It was a pretty successful record, but a lot of the fans were like, this isn't really Being as an Ocean that I remember. This isn't what I remember growing up with. This isn't what made me fall in love with you. It's still cool, but, and I think I kind of really took that personally. So the whole time I was like, Hey, there's still so much we got to do. There's still so much we got to say. So we kind of wanted to prove to ourselves and to our fans that, we are still those people writing those same sad songs and feeling the same sad ways and so on. But we took a risk, we took a chance, and then just sadly the pandemic happened, and it caused the path that the band ended up on, where we had members leave and big changes and so on. And I had to go back to England the whole pandemic, which was meant we had to put a pause on everything when it came to writing, when it came to touring. Obviously, it was so much uncertainty. So I think it gave us time to really think about what we wanted. If we're gonna do it, what is it that we're doing? If we've got something to prove, let's figure out exactly what it is. And when it's time, it will make sense. So yeah, the driving force was definitely still showing that there is something to prove in who we are. So
Makes sense. So can you tell us a little bit about your writing process for the album?
of course, yeah. It's pretty cut and dry with writing. A lot of it will come as like I'll take some heavy inspiration from a lot of different things. A lot of the inspiration in terms of melodies that I have for writing the music was television shows. I would like capture. I would try and like see how a piece of music could capture an emotion that I felt watching a television show. And there's one song on the record where the melody I kind of replicated from what something I heard on Grey's Anatomy. And it was a scene where somebody had just died, and there's a big fucking hoo-ha with the family about like, what are we gonna do? This is the end. And I just remember the music like really fucking like, tugging at me. And I was like, that's a beautiful piece of music. But I think the reason that scene was so sad was probably a lot because of the music. So I want to kind of do something like that that really like really like hopefully can affect people in that way. So yeah, it was more about like trying to piece melodies and ideas together that really made you feel something, as opposed to just like, oh, this is cool. It was like, no, hopefully it makes you feel something. And I presented a bunch of ideas to Joel. A lot of it was just guitar stuff that I recorded on my phone. A lot of it was just humming melodies into my phone and send them around. And then we went with Phil Gornell, amazing producer up in LA. Excuse me. And it took some convincing on some of the ideas that we had, but finally he came around to helping me piece them together the way that I think they need. Sorry, some kids just came through the I'm in a hotel lobby right now and one's going crazy.
You're good. We can still hear you pretty well.
Yeah, piecing together these ideas to make them sound a lot more put together and a bit more like easy for Joel to kind of go away, sit down and just like write how they make him feel and so on. So yeah, it came with I would present ideas, Joel would present ideas vocally and lyrically, and then we'd sit in a room together. But I remember before we even picked up an instrument or even had written a single thing towards the album, we sat down and just talked for like hours about what we want to represent, how we want to represent ourselves with this new record and new music. So yeah, after that conversation, it was a lot easier for me to, pick up a guitar and write how I wanted it to write, how I wanted it to feel and sound. And I feel like it was the same for Joel lyrically too. So
Hell yeah.
yeah.
Does your writing process, like the start, the base of it, change at all, like between writing for Being as an Ocean and writing for Heart of Gold, or is it all kind of ultimately the same process, just different projects?
Yeah, it's ultimately a similar writing process. Like heavy inspiration from as many different things as I can find. The biggest difference is obviously how it sounds. So, yeah, I'll, if I'm, I grew up with pop music, so that'll be my number one rotation playlist every day. I'll wake up and that's what I'll listen to. And I think a lot of modern day rock and pop, rock and metal music is so heavily influenced by modern pop music Like, if you listen to a Bad Omens chorus, the Just Pretend was one of the
Yeah.
suddenly became one of the biggest choruses on Earth. But you could also always you could hear that I do it for you at the that could be on a dance track. That could be
Oh yeah.
a Dua that could be a Dua Lipa chorus, you know? And I think it's
It
so
could,
it, yeah, it's that melody could be, you know, used in so many ways. And I think it's kind of using that is definitely a fun way of being able to kind of still use a similar writing process, but create so many different sounds or so many different genres almost. So yeah, it's yeah, very similar way in which you can piece a song together, but yeah, you just the outcome is obviously super different. So yeah,
makes sense.
I hope that makes sense.
It
Sorry,
does.
that was such
It
a
does. It
yeah.
does. Yeah. And while approaching the start of the album, did you take into consideration kind of your listeners' feedback from the last record? Because I know you mentioned they were like, "Oh, it doesn't sound
Oh
like,
yeah.
the old stuff." Did you take that into consideration, or did it just kind of like happen?
I definitely did, and I think I'll be honest, I think a lot of bands that tell you, "Oh, we're writing for ourselves, you know, fuck what everyone thinks." I think 9 times out of 10 that's probably bullshit, because I think bands will, I don't know. I mean, like I'm not one to speak for everybody, obviously, at all. But I do genuinely feel like a band will look at what people think of their most. You're only as good as the last thing you've done, I think. So I think if people were to believe that Proxy was our best piece of work, cool, fine. But going back to kind of having so much to prove, I think listening to what people were saying and reading all the comments, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, which is the worst one, by the way. YouTube
Yeah.
people are the worst.
Absolutely.
But
Yeah.
it was so constructive that I really started to appreciate everything I was reading, where it was like, well, this sounds like shit. And it's like, okay, well, why does it sound like shit? I kind of just would like deep dive into what people's opinions were on what we did. And, you know, I completely respect it. I don't hate anybody for that comment. If they think that what we put out was trash, then okay, fair enough. That's your opinion. That's great. Everyone is entitled to that opinion. I wasn't concerned with, oh, well, why do they hate it? I was more concerned with like, well, what do they like? You know, and what particular sound was it that they fell in love with when they fell in love with Beings in Ocean? And a lot of it came down to certain records we put out in the past. In particular, Dear God was the number one, that first record, where it was very like kind of raw sounding, just very, very guitar driven, not too much crazy production or anything. That one was like a super big influence. And then How We Both Wanted to Perish was kind of tiptoeing into a little bit more of the fancy production. We would have keyboards and stuff, and that became like that was a name that was brought up so much when it came to, you know, what they preferred from Being as an Ocean. And then more so was our record Waiting for Morning to Come, just kind of figuring out what people loved the most and where it was. And it seemed to be in the era of when we had like Dissolve and Black and Blue and Alone. And it was heavy drums, like real melody driven guitars with super gut wrenching, heartfelt lyrics from Joel. And I think that's what, like, re that's kind of where people seem to really land on Being as an Ocean as being a band that they could enjoy. So I think that's where we kind of sat when it came to, you know, the writing and so on. So I really hope I'm making sense.
You are.
Yeah.
I respect when bands admit that they listen to the fans, because it is not something bands do very often. Like, obviously, as you said, 9 out of 10 bands that are probably
You'll be
saying,
surprised.
yeah, that are
Yeah.
probably saying, oh, we did it for
We
ourselves,
did it. This
probably
is all
actually
us.
aren't and are listening to their fans. But there are not a lot of
Yeah.
bands, at least that we've had on the podcast, that admit publicly that they listen to their old music and they listen to what their fans say. And,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know,
I think, yeah, it's not like a cool thing for me to say, nah, fuck it, we did our own thing. It's like, yeah, obviously we did, and if you want to say we did our own thing, we did. I wouldn't say we did our own thing and shut everybody out, but I'd say we did a thing where we enjoyed what we were doing and we listened to our fan base. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. We created music that we loved, but taking into account so much what the people who keep this band alive, the fan base, what they were saying to us. So, it's, we can't please everybody. We could put this record out and there could still be a bunch of people online who hate it and say this, that, whatever about it. And cool, I'll take that into account the next time. But I have so much confidence in what we have created when it comes to Death Can Wait that I think it's a great opportunity for new people. But I always like the idea of if you were to introduce Being as an Ocean to somebody today who had never heard of us before, I like to think that we have created a piece of work in Death Can Wait that you can give that to them and they would like understand Being as an Ocean. Whereas if you gave them Proxy, I think they might, yeah, they could really enjoy that record, but then they'll listen to the past stuff and be like, this is a completely different band. And it's like, that's fine too. But I like to think that this record is something where you can be like, this is almost like a summary of Being as an Ocean and everything we've ever done. Like I said, like the guitar has super like heavy driven guitars, the real insane loud drums, the percussion is its own piece of art inside the song. Joel's lyrics are just as heartfelt and deep as they've ever been. And so that's kind of like where I like it to sit. And I think, yeah, like I said, man, any band that tells you, no, fuck the fans, we didn't do this. Like, well, not fans, but like we did this for us and nobody else. It's like, yeah, but did you though? Like you really didn't read the comments or listen to what your fans say. So yeah, that's kind of my belief on it anyway. And
Fair enough. You got to please the fans at least somewhat, because at the end of the day, they're part of they're a large reason why you have a career. Like,
The only reason we have a career,
yeah.
honestly, man, I think, and I think you'll see bands that, and that it will be like, oh, we used to do, sold out 1,000 cap rooms, and then they would start to develop that kind of we're doing this just for us and nobody else attitude. And it's like, that's cool, that's your thing. And then, years go by and you see, yeah, the rooms are getting slightly smaller, the crowd base is slowly kind of not turning on them, but kind of being like, well, we stuck with you as long as we could, and now we're just kind of not really digging it. And that just happens to be what it is sometimes, I think. And like I no absolutely no disrespect to everyone. I think anyone who is, has the drive and determination enough to create any kind of art, whether it's, any piece of music, anything at all, I have so much respect for, because it's not easy. It's absolutely not easy. And yeah, there are people that you do need to please, which is, that just happens to be what it is. But you got to stay true to yourself and stay true to what you fell in love with when you first picked up an instrument or first sang along to a song in the car or the shower or something. You have to stay true to that kid that you were. And that's what me and Joel definitely tried to do with Death Can Wait. But at the same time, yeah, just those people who keep us being able to say we have a career in music, albeit a full-time career in music, which is the best feeling on earth. There's so much with that. That why would we not respect their opinion? Why would we not, give them something that they, like I said originally, like that they initially fell in love with when they first heard us. So I think that's super important. So, and all feedback is so important to any musician, any type of business. You
Absolutely.
leave an awful review in a restaurant, that restaurant are not going to reply and be like, well, fuck you, sorry you didn't like it. They're going to be like, hey, yeah, we're sorry. Like, we appreciate your opinion and we'll do better next time. And it's not the same in music. It's not like, oh, sorry you didn't like our album, we'll try and write something better. And it's like, okay, I appreciate what you're saying and I'm listening to what you're saying, and That absolutely is in the consideration book now when it comes to writing new stuff, because it has to be, because you are the people that keep this band on the road. It keeps us, keeps us busy. It keeps us being able to do what we love to do. Yeah, as a career, that's and it, there's no shame in saying that it is an amazing career, and it does. It's been so wonderful for the last 10 years and for however many more. And yeah, so I would absolutely hands down give our fan base what they want any day of the week.
Hell yeah. I fucking love that. Let's go.
Hell yeah. Except money, because I don't have any money. I have nothing to give physically.
We'll give them all the music in the world.
Except
Just don't
musically,
ask me to spot you.
I'll give you another album of some sad music, but don't ask me for, don't ask me for
Parking
money,
meter.
man.
Oh yeah. All right. So what song off this album took the longest to write, and which one is your personal favorite?
It sounds like a cop out because it's already come out, but personally, I think the actual track "Death Can Wait" is, I don't know what it is, but there was such a sense of overwhelming pride when that song came together, and something about it when it kicks in, like after the tiny little singing, tiny bit of singing at the beginning, and when it kicks in and everything all at once, it still just gives me like this slight chill, and I don't know. I was just super proud of that song. So I think "Death Can Wait" itself as the track is certainly my favorite one, and I think lyrically some of my favorite things that Joel has ever written. Definitely singing about we're still doing it, we're still doing the fucking thing, and we're gonna do this until we're, until it literally cannot be done anymore, and that is why "Death Can Wait." So I think that for me was like the best.
Hell
Like
yeah.
personally,
Oh yeah.
And the longest to write.
longest to write, man, you know what, there's one song that actually never made the record that we spent so long on, and we were so stoked with it, but when we listened back to the record, it just like it almost didn't fit, so we were just like, maybe we kind of pump the brakes on this one and do something with it after the record comes out. But so actually, that's kind of a pointless answer because nobody's going to hear it anytime soon. But I think there's a single coming out when the record drops on Friday. It's called Gloom, and that one I remember specifically trying to find the right sound to accompany the vocals in particular was something we spent a good chunk of time on. So I think that one was the. In the studio, we'd be like, we'd be working on it for like an hour or two, and then it'll be like, yeah, let's come back to this one tomorrow. And then we'd like plow through the next song pretty quickly. And then it's like, let's open that file again and see if we can do any more to it. And then it just kind of, chip away at it every day, every other day, every week, whatever, until it was ready, until it felt ready. And I think we knew when it just felt ready. But yeah, I think Bloom was definitely one that I remember taking. What? Not a lot. I won't say it was like, months and months and months and months, but it was definitely out of all of them, I think it was definitely like one of the longest.
Gotcha. All right. So how'd the track list of the album come about? Did you guys write the opener be the opener, closer be the closer? Did you shuffle around and see what fits? What was that process like?
That was, I always usually like to trust Joel with that kind of decision, because I think there is a story to be told when in how if you were to listen, like I always encourage people when they listen to a whole album, please don't like jump from track one to six to two to 11 to whatever. Just run through it, because there will be a reason that it is in the line that it is. So, but it will definitely be more of a purposeful thing that Joel did. Maybe lyrically there is a story there, and I know "The Fullness of My Being," which is the final track on the record, it was definitely that was definitely placed last on purpose, because We round up that song talking about, I finally discovered the purpose. Yes, it may be, but this is record number six for this band, and we've been all around the world. We've done so many amazing things. We've had so many ups, some really, really bad downs, but we finally discovered who we are, and that is who we are as a full person and what our purpose is as creatives and as musicians and as doing what we do essentially. So I think the fullness of my being was definitely placed where it needed to be placed. But yeah, I think there's a story to be told in all the in the way the lyrics are from tracks one right through to the end. But I couldn't confidently tell you.
Fine.
Yeah, there was definitely a problem. There was maybe like possibly an hour long discussion that it was like, maybe this needs to go here and there and this. And then you kind of listen to it as like from a standpoint of, well, we can't have six really high energy songs and then a sad song and then back to every, do we break it up in that way? That was definitely a conversation we had. But I think overall, the placement of each track is like purposefully placed accordingly. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
Hell yeah. All right.
Oh, I hope so. I'm sorry.
It does. You're good.
Oh,
So you kind of went into it a little bit earlier, but if you want, you could go a bit more in depth. Are you able to tell us where your headspace is at while you're creating this record?
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like I said as well, I couldn't speak for Joel. I mean, we had a lot of discussions about where we were personally and mentally and emotionally during the writing period, during the build up to the writing period, during the pandemic. I think I saw, because I was living in San Diego briefly. I had to go back to England because my visa was going to expire when they shut the borders down. So I had to go back to England to make sure I, wasn't going to be breaking any laws with travel and stuff. And I moved back with my parents, and I mentally was in such a dark place, like just such a deep hole. And I couldn't, it was so difficult to you couldn't do anything during the pandemic. You couldn't go for a walk. You couldn't, if you were outside for, I think it was like longer than 15 minutes, the fucking police literally could ticket you. And it was just such an insane time. And I just remember feeling so like, I don't know, like in prison almost. And I know that's such a very strong word to use when it comes to feeling that way, but I was just so mentally like gone. I would wake up and just do nothing, and then I would make a cup of coffee and then do nothing. And I would, I you never felt like fully isolated, because I just kept reminding myself, everybody has to deal with this right now. It's not just me who has to like move back with my parents and not be able to go outside or not be able to, do this, that, whatever. It was everybody, all literally all around the world. I mean, yeah, some places restrictions weren't as crazy as others, but I just had mentally checked out. And I think I saw, in the year and a half that I was back there, I think I saw two or three different therapists. Like, on it was Zoom calls, it was FaceTimes, it was this, and I was just like, I cannot fathom anything else right now except just this insane dark feeling. And I think that definitely got channeled into some of the writing. Like, one thing I was grateful for was that I did have my little bedroom studio, so I could just like write ideas when I had them. I could, because I just like used that time productively to learn how to, produce music in a very, very, not super professional fashion at all, but like enough that it could pass for me to send to Joel, and then he'd be like, here's what I have vocally or lyrically or whatever. And yeah, we, like I said, before we even started any of that, we would have FaceTime calls or Zoom calls where we would talk about what we were feeling and how we wanted to do a new record. And he would be like, yeah, dude, I'm feeling it too. He would tell me, no, I won't go into obviously his, like, I guess, because it's not really his like I don't know, the way the pandemic affected him is his story to tell, and I wouldn't want to, downplay it or overplay it or whatever. So, but I know that he was in a very, very similar position. I think that was fuel for us to be like, all right, we've kind of got the recipe now for, cooking up a new record. But yeah, I think you kind of, it's such an old cliche adage to say, but you do kind of have to hit rock bottom to start the climb. And you can enjoy the climb, or you can, fucking make it the biggest bane of your life. But I think we kind of both had hit rock bottom and mentally checked out to the point where we were like, all right, the only way is up right now. So let's just, yeah, there's literally nowhere else to go below this. So we just have to go up. And I think, yeah, I think that was important though. I think that was definitely important to happen. And I know a lot of our friends in the industry, a lot of our touring friends, a lot of the music that's come out in the last 2 years was written probably during the pandemic. So, lyrics hit harder, music hits deeper because, like I said, everyone was going through the same thing. And yeah, we lost a lot of artists, we lost a lot of bands, we lost a lot of people that, like, just, I guess, just didn't want to do it anymore because the pandemic literally just took so much from people mentally, emotionally, physically. And yeah, it was tough. The headspace was a dark one for sure, but I think, like, to summarize it, I think it was needed to be able to do what we've been able to do since.
Yeah, makes sense.
Interesting.
It is good to hear though that like you guys you hit rock bottom, but then you were able to find the motivation to then work on a record. You didn't you were able to find something to do during all of that the terrible time that was the pandemic.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think creatives of all like outlets, musicians, writers, artists, designers, poets, podcasters, everybody had just their life had been put on this pause. Like somebody literally came in, pressed pause, and was like, "You're just gonna have to wait it out, sorry." And it's just like, fuck, I'm so used to doing this thing every day, and now all of a sudden I can't do it. And not only can I not do that, I can't do much else. And it's just like, what do I do? What don't I do? And yeah, I think having it really sucked. Everybody on earth will testify that that COVID was just awful, and the pandemic was so bad. It was so scary. It was, and even like as even from like a health standpoint, the amount of people that unfortunately lost their lives because of it was just like, man, that's a whole other conversation, obviously. But that's like, that was just such a crazy time in life, in history. And we're all going to be, 20 years time when we're all so much older and probably maybe not doing what we're doing right now. Everybody in those outlets is going to look back and be like, shit, you remember that and how it shaped me, and how it didn't, unfortunately couldn't shape other people. And it's, yeah, it's,
It's
I don't know
crazy
where I'm
time.
kind of going with this right now, but it, yeah, it was what it was. And I think, yeah, you kind of had to just, let it define you, but not let it consume you. And I think that was important.
Absolutely. So how do you recommend your fans to listen to this album for the first time? Should I do it in the car with friends in the dark with headphones on? Is the workout album, party album? What do you personally recommend?
That's funny. Somebody asked me this question recently, a friend of mine, and I said, I would honestly, what I would do is if you have a good set of headphones, AirPods, whatever, just however you consume your music, even if it's just through a laptop, even if it's just through your phone, like without headphones or whatever, just however you can enjoy a piece of music, that is how you should set up whatever situation you're in. And just please go to the beginning of the record, make sure shuffle is not on, and just hit play. And just try it, like just feel what is coming from those speakers. Like listen to the words, and I hopefully kind of, if it's possible, just digest some of what Joel is saying or what I am singing. And everything I'm singing on the record is something Joel has written. Like there's very, very minimal parts of this record that I've written lyrically. It's like almost 100% Joel. And I think there is absolutely something that you will resonate with, whether you like to think there is or not, or whether you believe there will be or not. I guarantee there will be something that you will be like, huh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's exactly what I'm feeling right now, or I felt 2 weeks ago or a year ago, or whatever. And just really think, and just like let it just, get into your mind and just really think about it, and just think about how it made you feel and how it can now change the way you feel if it was to ever happen again. And I don't know, just like really digest it. I think it doesn't even have to be cranked all the way up. A lot of people say, yeah, put it all the way up to fucking 10 and just like blast it and this, that, And yeah, obviously that's cool, but I think to really like listen to every single element that made this record what it is, just really give it time, like digest it, let it just kind of sit there, listen, like give it a week and then listen to it again, give it a day, listen to it again, however you digest music. I think there's a great story amongst the record of Death and Wait and the meaning behind Death and Wait. And I think a lot of people will be like, yeah, the meaning of the record is, I ain't ready to give up yet. I ain't ready to disappear. I ain't ready to pack anything in that I've wanted to do for so long. I'm not ready to give any of that shit up. And I think people from all walks of life could listen to that and be like, yeah, that's me. I don't want to give up, of being a photographer. I don't want to give up my dream of being a painter or a designer or this, that, whatever, or a musician, anything. I'm not ready for it. And death can fucking, it can wait. It ain't allowed in yet. I'm doing my thing. I still have a story to tell. And I just hope that people can listen to it and understand that, yes, this is our story to tell when it comes to Death and Wait, but it's meant for everybody to be a part of. It's like anything you read or digest, it's made for everybody. It's not just made for one person or for the person who created it. They created it for an audience, whether they meant to or not. Anything that somebody has created is made for an audience. And I think that audience will take from it what they can. You might listen to the whole thing and think one thing, and then somebody else might listen to the whole thing and think, yeah, I didn't get that at all, but this is what I got from it. And that's great. That's important. I think that's what we want. So just really feel it. Don't just listen to it, feel it. I think it's the one thing I can just ask of people. Just give it a chance.
That's a
Please.
good answer. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. So this one should be super, super quick. Off the top of your head, I want you to describe this album for new listeners in three words. No more, no less.
I will use, it's kind of cliche, I will use the word heartfelt.
Okay.
I will use the word, I'll say personal.
Okay.
It just sounds so cliche, but like my mind is wanting to just keep going back to the word emotional, but that's just almost too obvious. That just sounds like a description more than anything. And I want it to be, I don't know, something a bit deeper than that. But yeah, heartfelt, personal. God, I don't know. Yeah, let's just go with emotional,
I'll
because I
take it.
think if you say that you're feeling emotional, that shouldn't just, trap you into just when you hear the word emotional, you instantly go to the sad emotion. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what it is. So it could be, joyful, gleeful, sadness, happiness. It's any emotion. Emotional is, super subjective. So I'd say emotional is a good point. So yeah, let's
Sounds
go with
good.
that.
All right. And in that same train of thought, is there a certain feeling or emotion you want listeners to have while going through the album?
What I want them to have, just it's not so much an emotion, but definitely a thought process is just understanding, and patience, I guess, because this, like any music, any body of work is somebody pouring their heart out onto paper and into a microphone and pouring it out to the world to consume and listen to. So I think just some kind of just like understanding that, yeah, you might not like it, you might not, you know, vibe with the songs or whatever, but have some sense of understanding that this is who we are as musicians and as writers and as, you know, putting together this piece of music, this body of work. Just have a level of understanding that, like, this is who we are, this is what we feel, and this is where we've been at mentally and emotionally for the last almost 2 years of writing now. So yeah, just definitely to go into it with an understanding heart and a, you know, a patient mind.
For sure. So are you able to touch on any particularly challenging or standout moments from the creation of this album, positive or negative?
Not necessarily. I think positively, I think it was, you know, anytime you're in the studio and you write a certain part or a certain lyric or line just flows so nicely over a piece of music, or you nail that one melody that you want, and everybody in the room just kind of erupts with joy. That's kind of, that's definitely a positive. There was a lot of those moments where Joel and I drive up to LA together. We'd sit in the studio. We'd have moments like that with the producer, Phil. And then we'd sit in the car and listen back to what we've done on the drive back down to San Diego. And it's a couple hours drive, and we'd listen to the same song, you know, fucking 15, 20 times just to make sure we were really, really happy with it. And we'd, you know, we'd high five and we'd be so stoked that we'd just like put this together. So like positively, I think it's just, you know, being able to make it sound and feel the way we wanted it to sound and feel. And I think that was definitely a positive. The negative, I think, was definitely like, I don't know, like piecing together some of the ideas. You know, you go through waves of emotion every day. You know, one day you could be at absolute rock bottom. Like, yeah, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And then the next day you could be like, wow, this is the fucking happiest I've ever been. And you kind of, that kind of sets you up for the day. If I'm like, if I wake up and I have a great, I'm feeling great, I'm like, you know, I got good breakfast, I got good coffee, I've had some good news. And then like, I get to the studio and it's like, oh, you have to get back to writing this really fucking sad, dark song. Then that kind of would like, you know, you kind of be thrown a little bit because you just, you know, it's like, well, all of a sudden I kind of feel a bit more positive about this song. So what do I do? And, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, back and forth there, but that's not really a negative. I think it was definitely just, you know, so we had a goal in mind. We had a destination in mind, and the destination being where we wanted this album to be and how it sounded and how it made people feel. And so long as we stayed on the right journey and the right path, I think, yeah, that was just what we set out to do. So there was a lot of ups and downs of writing, for sure. You know, we couldn't agree on certain things, or we'd do something that we really liked, and the producer was just, you know, come in with his new set of ears and be like, yeah, I don't like it. You know, and we value that opinion too, because this guy's super professional. So, yeah, that's kind of like a super long-winded way of saying, yeah, there was definitely positives and definitely negatives, but everything in its stride, you know, it everything that you can hear would have taken all of that into account. So,
absolutely. Yeah. All right. And for the last couple of questions, we're going to shift completely away from music. So, if you could be one animal for the rest of your life, what animal would you be and why?
I would be my own dog, my boxer dog, Winston. That guy is so fucking lazy, and he eats well, and he doesn't pay rent. He sleeps in a bed every night because I'm too soft on him. I'd be Winston, my own dog.
It's a solid answer.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to wake you up at 4 in the morning because I have to go outside and poop. Yeah, hell yeah, I could do that.
Why the fuck not? Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Use the toilet? Get fucked. Come on, man. Do it outside. Yeah, I'd be Winston the boxer dog.
Perfect.
Winston the boxer dog, fuck yeah. And if you could have lunch with any celebrity or artist, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Okay, this is kind of controversial. Well, some people might find it controversial, but I grew up near Manchester in England, and I grew up with the Manchester music scene, and a lot of that music scene was based off older Manchester bands, in particular the Smiths and Morrissey. And I have a Morrissey tattoo, and this was before he, you know, became an asshole. But I mean, he's always been an asshole, but you know, everyone started to realize he was an asshole. I have a Morrissey tattoo because he was one of my favorite lyricists of all time. So I would sit down with him. I don't know if you know much about Morrissey's lore, but there's like so much shit about him online where he's like, I read this blog about him once, and he's like, he wakes up and he has to have a certain type of jelly on a certain type of toast. And I'm just like, come on, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, let's sit down and have some of this jelly on toast. And let's talk about where it all went wrong. And then also, like, let's talk about the Smiths and how incredible that was. And can you please apologize to Johnny Marr so you guys can do a reunion? it's a controversial one. And musically, Morrissey is, you know, I wouldn't say hero anymore, but he was for the longest time. And yeah, it's just love hate with him. But so yeah, I would say Morrissey for sure.
All right. And for this last question, boom, you're on a desert island. You can bring one movie, one album, and one person. Who and what are you bringing?
I bring my wife, Bree. But I think by extension, Winston the dog would have to come too, because that's just kind of like, there is a package deal, unfortunately.
Okay,
he does have to pee and poop on the island.
Exactly.
That's fine. It's one giant toilet, I'm sure. movie, okay, it would... Ah, man, that's a tough one, because my two favorite movies of all time are The Goonies and Stand By Me. So if I couldn't pick either one of them, so I'd go with my third favorite movie, which is Hot Tub Time Machine.
Okay.
It's like, people do not expect that whatsoever.
No. It's from one the first of the, two, completely out of left field.
Dude. Hot Tub Time Machine. I'm not even kidding. It's one of the funniest fucking movies I've ever seen in my entire. I've watched it. I'm not even kidding. In the last 12 months, I've probably watched it 10, 15 times, which is a lot for a movie in a year. But yeah, Hot Tub Time Machine. And musically, I would take Louder Than Bombs by the Smiths.
Nice.
Because that was a, like I was saying, with Manchester music, that was a record that I was like, yeah, I want to pick up a guitar. Yeah, I want to play some weird shit. So Louder Than Bombs by the Smiths, Hot Tub Time Machine, and yeah, my wife Brie, and by default, Winston would have to come too. Because nobody would be able to let him out otherwise. And he does get mad.
Yeah. Yeah, got to bring him with. All right.
Is Hot Tub Time Machine a Seth Rogen film? Did he direct that?
No. I can't think who directed it. Who was in it? It is
because John Cusack, in it, right?
No, he's not. It's what's his name? Clark Gable. He was in The Office.
Yeah,
they're very similar. That comedy is very, very similar. He plays like the younger guy who's like dead against them, going back in time and stuff. Oh man, John Cusack is in it. Rob Corddry? And
Craig Robinson. Chevy Chase. What the fuck?
Chevy Chase is definitely more of a cameo role in it. He plays like the janitor of the hotel who fixes the time machine for them. Oh my god, I'm gonna go watch it.
Got your plans tonight set.
Yeah. I know, right? There's not much to do around this hotel, so I'm just gonna but luckily the TV in the room does have Netflix, and I think Hot Tub Time Machine is on Netflix currently.
Yes.
So I'm all about that tonight.
Yeah.
I'll order a pizza and just have a night.
Good.
Yeah, really, really let myself go.
Yeah, a real rager tonight.
Exactly.
So as I said, that's all the questions you have today. Is there anything that you would like to plug?
I mean, the obvious choice right here is Death Can Wait, Being Is an Ocean, February 2nd, 2024. It's a brand new era for a not so brand new band, but I feel like it's a comfortable time to say that we are back. And it's an opportunity to say that I can confidently believe this is a being, this is a sound of being as an ocean that I think people that were once in love with us will fall back in love with us. And I think brand new people will hopefully fall in love with us for the first time. Just don't cheat on us. That's all. No, just go out and listen to it, enjoy it. And share it. Just tell one person about it and make sure they tell another person. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like there's something for everyone to enjoy and take from it. So,
for sure.
Hell yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for stopping, Michael from Being as an Ocean, and we have been the Good Noise Podcast. You.